Committee to order. Better late than never. And, is this 141? Yes, we are.
There is someone here to speak to it.
Yeah. We're going to open our work session on Senate Bill 141. And here comes the man with the amendments and all's right for the world.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Jerry Beberly, and I'm representing the Residential Providers Association of Oregon. Request your Senate Bill 141. Giving you written testimony is very similar to the letter that I wrote you and sent to your offices last week to give you some heads up on the bill. Very simply, my organization represents those who provide residential and vocational services for the developmentally disabled and, in some cases, for the mentally ill. And the problem that this bill addresses is that on some occasions the funding agency, that is the counties, are asking them to do more than that was expected of them, resulting in an unfunded mandate. To understand what I'm saying, you have to understand that we operate under a slot system. And that means the Mental Health Developmental Disabilities Division says, well, for this client to take care of this person, we'll give you X amount of dollars. That rate is set and sent down to the county, who then subsequently contracts with the provider. That's us. The problem arises that on occasions, and it's not widespread but enough to be a problem, some counties say, well, as long as you're doing this, we've got a few extra things we'd like you to do for us. And though as good citizens we support those things, such as planning for diversity, doing some extra audits and all that, the problem is nobody's paying for it. It doesn't get added on. It just says take it out of the slot the division's giving you, and we really don't have the money to do that, which ultimately ends up in shorting the client and making it harder to serve the client. So we came forth with Senate Bill 141. When we had it in the Senate, it was clear that the way the bill was drafted, that the scope was much wider than any of us met to have. Senator Fisher, the chair of the committee, appointed a work group of ourselves, the counties, et al., and we sat down and worked out a set of amendments that ended up in the A. N. Gross copy. At that point, we had concurrence on the bill. Yesterday, the Association of Oregon Counties folks said, well, you know, we got a couple other things we'd like to solve. So we sat down this morning, worked out the amendments that you have in front of you, which are the A5s. What the two problems the counties had, and we assured them that we were not trying to interfere with their good duties. In fact, you'll receive my testimony says we understand that they have a role and it's a valuable role and we honor that. We're not trying to get in the way of it. In some places, they use the contracting procedure to require that the facility be kept up, the grass cut, house painted, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And that they use that to work with the neighborhood associations to make them feel more comfortable. They were afraid that the provisions of this bill might impinge upon that. So we wrote an amendment that makes it very clear that the counties have every right to do that. The second problem they had is they were afraid that this bill could be interpreted to mean that the division would have some control over the monies that the counties put into the system. We never meant that, so the remainder of the amendment makes it very clear that these only apply to the funds that are coming down from the division. So with that, as far as I know, we have concurrence with the bill.
And the counties have told me that they are fine, let's get them.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Jerry, are you saying that you didn't like unfunded mandates?
No, I don't like it. And it was kind of the joke with others as we had them doing to you.
You think maybe we can take this same approach with the federal government?
You can try.
It won't work, but we can try. Any other questions? Thank you, Jerry.
Thank you very much.
So I will move the dash A5 amendments into Senate Bill 141.
Representative Piercy has made the motion. Is there any discussion? Is there any objections? Hearing none, the amendments are adopted.
Mr. Chair, I will move Senate Bill 141. As amended to the floor,
with the Senator Piercy moves Senate Bill 141A engrossed as amended to the floor. DePauw's recommendation. Any discussion? If not, the clerk will call the roll.
Representative Winters.
Aye.
Representative Taylor.
Aye.
Representative Kirksey.
Aye.
Representative Trumbull.
Aye.
Representative Close.
Aye.
Schechter.
Aye. Senate Bill 141, having received the required majority, is declared passed. We'd like to carry. Representative Kirksey, thank you very much. Mm-hmm. And I will close the work session on Senate Bill 141, and I'm going to open a work session on Senate Bill 312.
Chairman, for the record, James Taves, Mental Health and Development and Disability Services Division. By way of background, a real quick explanation of the bill. During the last legislative session, a policy decision was proposed by the Department of Human Resources and approved through the budget process to transfer services primarily to children with developmental disabilities from SCF to the Mental Health and Developmental Disability Services Division. It was based on a long set of discussions and debates in a work group with family members, with children with developmental disabilities, and the issue that in the end, children, for the most part, require adult services as well, and we wanted to create a more seamless system without the constant transition between agencies. As part of that policy decision, Senate Bill 312 was introduced this session to give the Mental Health and Developmental Disability Services Division authority to certify foster care independent of SCF, and secondly, to make sure that all of the benefits that foster homes serving this very critical population had within SCF were rolled over. And there's a whole series of benefits or supports that have been long established in statutes that include tort liability under the state, access to health insurance, free park passes. I can't even enumerate all of them, but there are things that have been in statute traditionally, and so all of those are researched and rolled over as part of Senate Bill 312. In the last week or so, we've been in pretty intense communication with a set of very strong advocates for children who are foster care providers who've raised, I think, some very legitimate concerns that we had not solved in this transfer. And I hope that we have done that, although I think some concerns obviously remain. But what we've done is we've changed the terminology from license to certification. The fear was that if we started referring in a different division to a license as opposed to a certificate for foster care, that we'd have problems with insurance viewing this more as a facility, a business, as opposed to a real family home, which they're intended to be. And so we've made that change. Secondly, we have assured that the existing rules for foster care, including foster homes that serve children with developmental disabilities, will remain the same identical rules now used by SCF until there is any change, and that as part of a discussion about any changes in rules, we will have an extensive work group with open participation with all parties. We've made that. We've said we will provide written guarantees to that effect, and that nothing changes until that process has been completed. Thirdly, as part of that, we've announced our intent to have essentially a base rule for foster care that would go across OIA, the Mental Health and Developmental Disability Services Division, and SCF, so that any foster home for children would know what the base requirements were, and then if we have special conditions or added conditions based on a specific child's need for supervision or something under OIA or because of the medical condition or other needs of a disabled child, that would be added on, but that all foster parents, no matter what system they're contracting with, would have some assurance that they're being treated equally across the board. I think those are the major elements, and then also based on the family members and the foster care parents that we will come back to an interim committee for another opportunity, that if we have
abused the process and not consulted with folks, that there's an opportunity for both us to report back and for them to tell you what a wonderful job we've done or not.
And if not, I'm sure we'll hear.
I'm sure you'll hear.
Representative Winters.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just so I clearly understand that it is the intent that you will stay with the existing rules of service to children and families until sometime in the future. Is that correct? And when that time occurs, that you will include the committee who worked on these, this little problem of transferring from services, children, families to the mental health? Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, Representative Winters, yes, we have guaranteed that. We're going to put it in writing. And I'm sure you will hear back if we fail in that guarantee.
I would like to have a copy of your written statement for my file.
We'd be pleased to do that.
Thank you.
I just want to express my appreciation for the work that's been done. My file is full, and my office is full of folks who've come to speak about their concerns about this. So I just want to commend you all for working so hard on this. And I've been noting all the nodding heads in the room.
Chair, members of the committee, my name is Caleb Hefner, and I'm from Services to Children and Families. For the record, I'm the Deputy Administrator, and I'm here to support passage of the bill. And James, I think, has done a really good job of summarizing the content, and we have met. And our concern is that the families that we value so much are treated and have the same supports when they go, when they're serving children from the mental health and developmental disabilities side of the house, the same as they are with SCF. And I believe that the intent of the language that was crafted just today, in fact, today is the first time I saw the amendment, if the language there reflects the intent, I think it's going to do what we feel it needs to do to make sure that those families are cared for. And we're going to continue to work with the Mental Health Division to make sure that those bridges are made, and that if there's anything that we can do from our side to help that transition, we stand ready to do that.
It should be easy. You work in the same building.
Close.
Yes.
Not quite. My name is Catherine White with the Oregon Developmental Disabilities Council. And as you are well aware, there were quite a number of issues that came to our attention after this bill passed in the Senate, and they were very, very legitimate, concerning issues for all of us. I think that everyone agrees that a strong and supported system of family foster care is absolutely critical to those of us who are advocates for children with developmental disabilities. You see the notes from the work group, and there are a number of issues that are policy issues that are not necessarily affected specifically about this by this legislation. And the Developmental Disabilities Council will be working very closely with foster parents during the interim to assure that we have an opportunity to address those policy issues. And we've maintained a commitment to be there and to help and support family foster providers through this process in making sure that they are involved in the rulemaking, that they are aware of what's going on, and the interim committee reports.
Questions?
I have questions. I'm very concerned about this bill. I have this many letters against it. Well, they asked me to oppose it. I realize you've met in a work group saying that you'll have people involved in the rulemaking change, but the fact is that the stuff that's down in paper is a 1.5-page amendment, and I'm not convinced that all their concerns are met in a 1.5-page amendment. And I'm not convinced that this shouldn't be worked on in the interim without passing this huge change now. So could you address that?
Mr. Chair, Representative Close, part of it I'd like to turn over to the agencies. The rulemaking process can only start once there's the statutory authority to develop those rules. we feel, as an advocacy organization, that families and folks that are involved in this issue need to be at the table. I think that there are a number of policy issues that need to be addressed. We're comfortable that we have enough momentum to make sure that those policy issues get addressed, and that that rulemaking process will be inclusive. We have both on tape, and I just want to point out that we also, in this work group, thanks to the efforts of Chair Cruz's office and Senator Shields' office, we had the discussions taped where we have the agency commitments. For example, on the rulemaking process, that it would start with regional forums that would involve any foster family that wants to be involved to provide input, and then for groups of foster families to select their representatives to participate in the design of the rules, and then there's the open process to review those rules.
I appreciate that, but the fact is that when you wrote this bill, you did not get the input of these people. The Department of Human Resources apparently did not involve them. That is a bad sign.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Close, if I can respond a little bit. I think in part it is a bad sign, yes, but I think we mistakenly looked at this as a technical amendment to implement a policy decision that had already been made, and I think we really miscalculated in that because the policy decision on the transfer had already been made. In fact, the programs, the dollars, the staff and all that, that transfer has already occurred. It was approved in the budget last session, and there were several emergency board reports during the interim to further enforce that policy. This was, in our minds, viewed as the issue of solving the certification of foster care and assuring the same level of supports and benefits that are in existing law on the SCF side. The dilemma we face is if we don't move forward is that we will still be responsible for homes in which developmental disabilities kids reside in foster care. But if the bill doesn't pass, we'll have to do dual certification with SCF, which also has statutory authority. And the problem is we're opening a lot of new homes for kids with developmental disabilities that SCF does not have the staff and resources to support. So without the authority also in statute to do certification, we then throw back responsibilities to SCF for which they do not have the staff and resources.
Senator Winters.
Mr. Chair, if we're in work session, I would like to move the...
I think there's one more question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was just reviewing a couple of the letters that I've gotten on this, too, and I have gotten a bunch. But one concern that I have that is pointed out in a letter to me from some folks in Portland, and that is the charge of the potential of duplication of services. And
Representative Crummell, I got all the same letters. All those letters were written based on the bill as it came from the Senate. The concerns in those letters have been addressed in the amendments. And I want to thank the work group that has worked on this. I do think the Senate thought this was basically a housekeeping bill, and it was quite a surprise to me to suddenly start getting all of this correspondence on a bill that had passed the Senate 29-0, and we have a bad bill here. In fact, it got to the point where we had a meeting in the Speaker's office on this, and out of that came this work group, and I want to thank you all for the hard work you've done on this. I also want to say that the Interim Human Resources Committee, whether it's joint or singular, is going to be very interested in how this process evolves. And so this will continue to have a high level of involvement and oversight. And I also want to say that the agencies they weren't trying to be the bad guy here. It was just a matter of maybe not seeing the forest for the trees to a degree, more or less. I mean, they were making the technical changes that were absolutely necessary, and you're right, they're necessary that we make these changes so the program can be truly shifted, so we aren't doing this in dual agencies. So, you know, thank God we're a bicameral legislature, and so we have a chance to catch these things.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Winters.
I'm satisfied that they have addressed the double, the requirement of both agencies being involved in certification and licensing, and that they are working together, and they've done a good job, and all the heads out there nodding tells me that they've done a good job, and I do have confidence that they will work continuing interim, and as such, I will move the dash two amendments. Dash A two amendments to Senate Bill 312.
Representative Winters has made the motion. Is there any discussion?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Close.
Unless you're going to explain to me otherwise, all I see here is licenses change a certificate in a number of places, and they talk about the rule making. That is all I see. It has been changed. Is that correct?
And they report.
And then they report back. But the meat of this is the rulemaking. And the rulemaking, am I correct there? I mean, the rulemaking...
Mr. Chairman, there actually were a whole series of other policy issues that didn't relate to Senate Bill 312, but were caught up. For example,
right.
In part of the change through a different payment system, suddenly it started kicking out 1099s. I'm sure you got part of that in your letters. And foster care payments are absolutely tax-free under the federal and state code, and so we made a commitment that's inappropriate, and we have to fix that for January 1st to make sure that the real 1099 don't go out. There were a series of issues that complicated this and were thought to be part of Senate Bill 312. They're part of the process, but they're not related to this particular bill, and I think that was part of the confusion.
And that is what the work groups are going to address. As we do this shift.
Well, what would have brought about the charge of duplication of services? Why? What would have brought about that, and has it been fixed? I mean, that's all a duplication. I mean, I don't know, because they don't say in their letter what the duplication is. I'm just wanting to know what that is. And satisfy me on that, and I'll vote it out of here.
Chairman Cruz, Representative Crummell, what this allows is that instead of having a child comes into the Child Protective Service system and we certify the home for that child, and then the child is another child perhaps placed on home that's developmentally disabled, and then you have the developmental disability services come out and they certify the home, and then that home also accepts a child that comes in from the Oregon Youth Authority, and they have their certification process, so then that home is certified once again. And what this really does in the amendments that you have before you, it's really adopting until there's comparable rules that can be done at the mental health level. There is a way for them to just use our certification rules, and we're working together so that there can be just a single certification, and that certification will serve both mental health, it'll serve Oregon Youth Authority, it'll serve us, regardless who it is that works with that family first. That's the duplication issue we're addressing.
And these amendments address that.
These amendments actually help us do that.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Is there opposition to the amendment?
I'm in opposition.
Okay. Record that. Representative Close is in opposition. With one opposed, amendments are adopted.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 312 as amended to the floor with discussion.
Representative Winters has made the motion. Is there any discussion? None. Clerk, call the roll.
Representative Winters.
Aye.
Representative Coleman.
Aye.
Representative Lee. Crummell.
Aye.
Representative Knoll.
Aye.
Representative
Searcy.
Aye.
Representative
Close.
Nay.
Chair Cruz.
Aye. Senate Bill 312, having received the required majority to declare it passed, Representative Winters would like to carry, and I will close the work session on Senate Bill 312. Thank you all very much.
Okay, where are you going to go now?
Oh, let's go back to the top.
Okay. Sure.
to Ross Page, too, right?
Okay.
I'm going to open our work session on Senate Bill 302.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Don Walker. I'm a naturopathic physician practicing in Portland, Oregon. With me today, I have the executive officer, Ann Walsh, with me today. I'm a past member of the Naturopathic Board of Examiners, and I'm here today to testify in favor of Senate Bill 302. On page 2, line 17, the Naturopathic Board wishes to add the following. It's a certificate of special competency in natural childbirth. Changing this wording here was suggested by the board's legal counsel. On page 2, line 42, a person whose license is inactive status must submit by December 31 of each year satisfactory evidence to the board that 10 hours of approved continued education in the year preceding date on which the evidence is submitted. This wording will assure the board that the inactive license holder has stayed current on their medical education when they petition the board for another active license. On page 3, line 6, upon payment of a fee required under ORS 685.100, this establishes a minimal fee for the admission of a special competency certificate in natural childbirth. This fee for the certificate must have prior approval from the Oregon Department of Administrative Services. If there's any questions, I'll be happy to answer your questions.
Any other questions? Yes.
Thank you. Dr. Walker, on your testimony, the second page where you refer to the person whose license is in active status, has to have continuing education. And then the next paragraph says, the addition of this wording will assure the board that the inactive license holder has stayed current. So I'm confused by that.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Taylor, that's a typing there. That should be a license who is inactive status. I'm sorry about that.
Yes.
I'm sorry about that.
Uh-huh. There. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Other questions? Representative Crummell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess I really have three questions. Let me just ask them, and then you can answer them. Do NDs currently practice childbirthing? What are the malpractice insurance issues related to the natural childbirthing? And is there an impact that this will have on the nurse and midwives, who I understand are a direct access sort of a provider? And I'm just, that's it.
Mr. Chair, Representative Crummell, the naturopathic physicians have for a long time had a special group of doctors who specialize in natural childbirth. And these doctors must have extended continued education, and they have to be certified by the board, and they have to have continued education every year. And so this is a special group. As far as I know, they all carry malpractice insurance, but I'm not familiar with all of their malpractice insurances, but I think that they, most of them carry malpractice insurance. The nurse midwives deliver most of their babies in a hospital facility. The naturopathic especially doctors that deliver, they usually do home deliveries, so I don't think there's a big competition for that. This bill should have no physical impact on the Board of Examiners.
It'll have no impact?
It should have no impact on it.
Okay. Other than the fact that they can collect a fee, I'm sorry, Mr. Chair, other than the fact that they can collect a fee for that special certificate?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Coleman, that is correct, yes.
Thank you. Thank you. Any other questions?
No. All right. Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 302 to the floor with a due-pass recommendation.
Senator Piercy has made the motion. Is there any discussion? Questions? If none, let's talk slower. Will the clerk call the roll?
Representative Winter.
Aye.
Representative Taylor.
No.
Representative Piercy.
Aye.
Representative Crummell.
Aye.
Representative Canoe.
Aye.
Representative Close.
Aye.
Chair Cruz.
Aye. Senate Bill 302, having received the required majority, is declared passed. Carrier? Representative Crummell, thank you very much for volunteering.
Sure.
We'll close the work session on Senate Bill 302 and open the work session on Senate Bill 825.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The record, my name is Art Kyle, representing the Association of Naturopathic Physicians. With me is, again, Dr. Walker, naturopathic physician practicing in Portland. Senate Bill 825 is a simple measure that allows naturopaths to refer their patients who need such a referral to physical therapists. Statutes were originally assembled. Naturopaths were excluded. No reason other than no one apparently represented them and asked that they be included. The practitioners who are allowed to refer to physical therapists are physicians, podiatrists, dentists, physician assistants, chiropractic physicians, and nurse practitioners. Some of the naturopaths who have both licenses, chiropractic and naturopath, can refer to physical therapists. Physical therapists have no opposition to this bill. They've chosen not to say anything in opposition. The bill merely corrects and allows naturopathic physicians to refer their patients who need physical therapy to a physical therapist.
Any questions, Representative Crummell?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My only question is that should similar language have been added into subsection C? Subsection 1, sub 1, sub C, line 16. It says diagnosis referral made in another state by a medical doctor or osteopathic physician, because you have everybody listed up above in the B section. But you don't have then in the C section, you don't have licensed physicians outside of the licensed naturopathic physicians outside the state. And I was just wondering, will that create any kind of a problem?
None that I'm aware of, Mr. Chair, Representative.
Okay, I'm just wondering, Mr. Chair, if there would be because it specifically mentions out of state. And I was just wondering if that would be language that needed
current law. So.
Right. No, I understand. But see, if you have an ND, for example, that is practicing in Vancouver and he's not licensed in Oregon, but he's licensed in Washington, can he, under this statute, could he refer, he or she refer a patient to a physical therapist in Portland?
No,
or in any of our border towns? That would be. If you're not worried about it, I won't worry about it either, but I just want to make sure that this isn't something that got overlooked.
I think you're getting into a little different ballgame here as far as agreements that have been made across state lines and stuff like that, and I don't think it applies here.
Okay.
So it's kind of apples and oranges to a degree.
You have to support a medical engineer.
Well, specifically, Mr. Chair, you're calling, we're calling out naturopathic physicians licensed under 685 in B, but in C, where we've specifically said doctors that are licensed in other states, we've specified medical doctors, osteopathic physician, or podiatric physicians licensed by an authority of the state similar to the Board of Medical Examiners for the state of Oregon, or by a dentist licensed by an authority of the state similar to the Board of Dentistry. And I just, I mean, I don't want to make a big issue out of it.
Physician assistants, nurse practitioners, chiropractors are all not included in that section, so it's not a, there's a, I think there are other reasons that this bill is not meant to address.
Okay, that's fine.
Mr. Keel, the first paragraph of your testimony, the last line, says that naturopaths are authorized to both refer and receive referrals from physician therapists. And I don't...
Mr. Chairman, Representative Taylor, that physical, that's my typo. I'm sorry, the previous people had a typo. That should say physical therapist.
Okay.
So we've discovered a new category.
I'm a proofreader, I guess.
We have not discovered proofreader.
Yeah, I don't know all the health care provider categories, so thank you.
Mr. Chair, Representative Taylor, the testifying person here is the one who typed that, and so that I would...
Any other questions?
Okay, Mr. Chair, I will move Senate Bill 825 to the floor as recommendation.
Representative Piercy has made the motion. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, will the clerk call the roll?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members.
Representative Winters?
Aye.
Representative Taylor?
Aye.
Representative Piercy?
Aye.
Representative Crummell?
Aye.
Representative Close?
Aye.
Chair Cruz?
Aye. Senate Bill 825, having received the required majority, is declared passed, and because it's on the theme, Representative Crummell, would you carry?
Oh, sure. I'd be happy to.
Representative Crummell, carry, and we'll close the work session on Senate Bill 825. We have Senate Bill 210. We are still waiting amendments. Hopefully, we'll have them tomorrow. So, we will... I'm going to open a work session on Senate Bill 1096.
Hey, we're done.
Chairman, members of the committee, I'm Ed Patterson, representing the Oregon Association of Hospital and Health Systems. And I know you've heard this before, but this really is just a little housekeeping. I'm sure you all believe that.
The words that scare me the most.
Mr. Chair, the original law is written that created the ability of health districts to form. It was written in 1957, and there have been a little bit of tinkering with it over the years, but over the years, not a substantial amount of tinkering. And of the 63 acute care community hospitals in the state, 15 are district hospitals. I believe I'm correct in saying that all 15 are located either on the Oregon coast in the rural areas or over in eastern Oregon. And this bill basically tries to address the issue of the way health care has changed over the years and the way hospitals have evolved in terms of the ability to integrate with other hospitals, to form different alliances, to joint venture. And so we were asked by some district hospitals in the state to rewrite the law. Primarily, and I'm sorry, Representative Lehman isn't here, but it was primarily driven by the Bay Area Hospital in Coos Bay, because the Coos Bay Hospital is a fairly large, by rural standards, a large, very sophisticated hospital.
Mr. Chair, I thought he was going to say primarily driven by lawyers.
Well, if the
truth were to be known.
And I'm sorry he's not here for that.
Well, if truth were known, it was given by a lawyer. It was an in-house attorney and on staff. He handled it. The Bay Area Hospital was the primary driver in this. And we took it, we got the revision, we got a consensus of all the small district hospitals and the larger hospital in the Bay Area, and introduced the bill over on the Senate side, with Senator Turnow being the prime sponsor and Representative Lehman being one of the sponsors. And I don't believe there's any opposition to it. However, in the course of introducing the bill, we discovered that there was a little paranoia from the smaller hospitals around the Bay Area. So there was some concern about a large or a district hospital operating a health service within another district. So we drafted an amendment that everybody agreed to within our association, and that amendment was adopted over on the Senate side. And unfortunately, when the amendment came out, the bill was up for hearing, and while the amendment wasn't the way we had asked for it, we did make it clear on the record that what the intent was. Subsequent to that amendment being adopted in the bill passing the Senate, it was brought to our attention by the Oregon Medical Association that the amendment that we had drafted probably was not worded too well, and we agreed with that. So you also have the dash two amendments before you. And these dash two amendments are a consensus of attorneys from the Oregon Medical Association and the Oregon Association of Hospitals. And we support the dash two amendments. We think it's clarifying and was the intent of our original amendment. We would ask the committee to adopt the dash twos and pass the bill.
Mr. Chairman, for the record, my name is Scott Gallant. I represent the Oregon Medical Association. I agree with Mr. Patterson. We would like you to support the dash two amendments. I move the bill.
Any questions?
No, but I could.
You could do that, Representative Piercy.
I will move the dash two amendments, A2 amendments to Senate Bill 796.
Representative Piercy has moved the dash A2 amendments. Is there any discussion? Are there any objections? Hearing none, they're adopted. Representative Piercy.
Yes, I will move Senate Bill 1096 as amended to the floor of the due pass recommendation.
Representative Piercy has made the motion. Any discussion?
I'll vote for this bill if you'll make Representative Lehman carry it.
That was my plan.
Because he's got to put it down.
Okay. Any other discussion? Hearing none, will the clerk call the roll?
Representative Winter.
Aye.
Representative Taylor.
Aye.
Representative Piercy.
Aye.
Representative Crummell.
Aye.
Representative Snow.
Aye.
Representative
Snow.
Aye.
Chair Cruz.
Aye. Senate Bill 1096 having received the required majority is declared passed. Representative Green will carry, and I'll close the work session. And the reason I wanted you two gentlemen to stay here, you have committee members a memo about a party scheduled for next Thursday. Rumor has it that the speaker is going to be requiring our services next Thursday. So, and the reason these two gentlemen are here, if you look on the second sheet, these are two of the folks that have graciously offered to help us with the party. So, we are going to attempt to reschedule for the next Wednesday, and pray to God that we're on the floor that night. So, and I think that's probably fairly safe, and I appreciate, Ed, you doing this shift for us. We do appreciate that.
We'll make it really good.
Okay.
Thank you.
And thank you very much, and having no further business, we are adjourned.